Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver here on American Family Radio. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. How you doing? How you holding up? What's going on with you? It's not that we're not interested in your loved one. It's just that I'm very interested in you and seeing how you are doing under the challenges and sometimes the strain of caring for a chronically impaired loved one. More than 65 million Americans do this right now. If you're one of them, you're in the right place. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. Hey, I wanted to depart from some of our normal things that we talk about, and I want to give a few safety tips because I've been seeing this alarming trend and how people are getting defrauded, cheated, scammed, all of the above. And I'm sure you all have experienced this with spam calls and emails and so forth. And this time of year in the fall is when Medicare's enrollment, open enrollment, and so you get all kinds of people calling you and wanting you to change over your Medicare stuff. And it's a mess out there. I mean, we just get inundated and there's a lot of fraud. Here's a couple of tips you might want to remember. When answering a phone call from a number that you don't know, a lot of times if you say hello, it will trigger the call center that is pestering you to launch into their recorded message. So rarely, if ever, do I answer the phone with hello. Okay? I mean, think about that. Every time you say hello and you hear a little bit of a delay and then you hear, good afternoon, this is Susan from so-and-so, you know, and they're real perky and you think you're talking to somebody, but you're not. They've got this thing down pretty cold and they certainly know how to do this, but you're not. Having a conversation with anyone, it's with an automated system and it's triggered by you saying hello. So when I answer the phone, I usually say good afternoon or good morning or whatever. That causes a bit of a conundrum for the automated system because they don't recognize that. Now, don't tell anybody that I'm doing this, okay? I don't want the automated system to change their stuff. This is just twixt us, all right? Just you and me. So let's just keep that amongst ourselves. But careful with your dialogue because they have it set up to be triggered by hello. And if their automated system is triggered by and recognizes you saying the word hello, then I have one question to ask you. What other words triggers their automated system? And that would be the word yes. So when they ask you a yes or no question, they get you saying yes. They have your voice saying yes, and they are defrauding people by using their voice to agree to a certain thing. Okay? This is the world we live in. It's just the way it is. So be careful with your speech when you're on the phone with somebody that you do not know. Actually, be careful with your speech when you're on the phone with somebody you do know. But in this particular case, be careful with your speech. And instead of saying yes, when they ask you a yes or no question, say, I believe that is correct, or possibly, or whatever. Just, you know, don't even talk to them. I talk to a lot of these spammers because I like to find out kind of what's going on with them, what's the trend. But if I'm having to hold the phone to my ear, I will never talk to anybody. But I'm always on my Bluetooth earpiece. So I'm doing ironing, washing the dishes, cooking, or a whole list of chores that I may be doing. And I'll listen to them and see where it's going and watch for those kinds of things. So I can hopefully pass them on to others to help them avoid getting trapped in that. There's another one goes out there, and you'll see this more and more. Elderly people get a call, and they'll say, hello, and they'll say, Grandpa? Well, they get a little confused, and then they'll answer, is that you so-and-so? And then they'll say, yes. Now they have a name of the grandchild, and they'll play along like they need some money. And this happened to me one time. I got a call from someone who said, Grandpa? And I said, yes. Is that you, David? Well, I don't have a grandson named David, and the grandsons that I do have are under 8. So I knew exactly what it was, but I thought, I'll play along here. And I said, is that you, David? Well, my grandson's name, again, is not David. And he said, yeah. I said, how are you doing? You know, not too good. And I think I've told you all this story before, but he goes on this long story about how he was in a car wreck and the lady he hit was pregnant and she had to go to the hospital. Everything's okay, but they got bills they got to pay. I mean, it was a pretty elaborate story. And as a writer myself, I was impressed. This guy would make a very good writer. But I kept him on the phone for several reasons. One of them, I wanted to see where this would go, and I like to play with these guys. And maybe the most important reason I did that is because I like to have them waste their time. Now, remember, I'm cleaning the kitchen while I do this. I'm doing laundry or whatever. So I'm going to be doing something anyway. It's just on my earpiece. So I'll clatter around, and I like for them to waste time. So maybe their superiors will, punish them, or they will. I just like to waste their time because they certainly waste mine. And so I kept him on the phone for a while. And he had this elaborate story. He wanted me to send some money. And finally, after I'd let him just make his case, and I could tell he was getting a little bit antsy and he really wanted to close this deal. And I said, well, it sounds like you got a really big problem. And he said, yeah, I need some money. Would you help me? And I said, well, why should I help you? You're not even my grandson. And then I hung up on him and blocked the call. So that's because I'm me and I like to do that sort of thing. And when I get telemarketers call, I like to rag them pretty hard as well. I do not recommend that, okay? Let me just be clear. I don't recommend that you do any of those things. That's just me amusing myself at periodic times. Now, sometimes I don't do that. I mean, Gracie's like, do you not have enough to do? Because I can give you some more to do. And I was like, yes, I have plenty to do. But if I am just in that frame of mind, I like to amuse myself at making the lives of telemarketers a little bit more challenging. And that's something I would recommend you guys paying attention to and checking in with those of you with elderly parents, really paying attention to. Another one is the emails. They'll send out stuff that has the header of the company. Like, I got a thing, your invoice has been paid with such, it was $400-something to this company. I think it was McAfee or something, antivirus. And I looked at the email very carefully, and I have automatic payment stuff set up with certain things, so I can pretty much tell. But if they don't have any kind of valid contact information, phone number, all that kind of stuff, they are fishing for you, and they're wanting you to respond and reply back to them and then try to solve this problem, get your money back, and they'll say, well, let me have your credit card. Never give your credit card out to these people for any reason like that. Do not do this over the phone. Do not do that. And you can usually start spotting, if you're paying attention, the ones that are legit and ones that are not. And try to minimize how much you give your credit cards out. Try to minimize how much you don't. If you reply back to them, then they're going to use that as an opportunity to get into your life a little bit more. You give them a toehold, they'll get a foothold. You give them a foothold, they'll give a stronghold. It sounds pretty much like a spiritual warfare, but that's the reality of what we're dealing with here. They are relentless, and there's a reason they do it, because it works. So be aware. Watch how you answer the phone. Do not say hello to somebody that you don't know. Don't say the word yes when you're speaking to an automated system like that. You could say affirmative, or that is correct, or legitimate companies will have a press one kind of thing. You know, if it's yes, press two if it's no. Just be aware, be alert, and be suspicious. Be vigilant at all times, okay? I am no longer trusting on a lot of things when it comes to telecommunications and when it comes to our emails. So I'm just throwing that out there. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with things you never want to say to a caregiver. Things you never want to say to a caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. We'll be right back.
In a world where no one can tell us no.
To this day, every human being born on this planet is the product of a male and a female. That's the way God set it up.
God created us in His image.
A place where Facebook and YouTube have no control.
I think the command in Scripture relative to men and women is not mainly women sit down, but men stand up, act like men, lead as you're supposed to.
A place where we can no longer be canceled.
When the Scripture speaks, God speaks. And if you understand that rightly, then everything else simply falls into place.
The American Family Association presents the AFA streaming platform. Just visit streaming.afa.net for the latest films, documentaries, and AFA original productions. You'll even find videos from some of your favorite talk shows. All you have to do is create a free account at streaming.afa.net.
I'm Peter Rosenberger, and this is your Caregiver Minute. Sometimes as caregivers, we look at the problems in our field of view and try to tackle all of them at once. The healthy approach is dealing with what is nearest to us. My martial arts instructor often tells me to fight what's closest. A distant opponent can wait until we deal with the obstacle directly in front of us. Difficult things may lurk on the horizon for caregivers, but fixating and fretting over them, that's just unhealthy. Planning is appropriate, but we better serve ourselves and others by focusing on what lies within our grasp rather than living in the wreckage of our future. Sometimes it's as easy as just doing the next right thing, which may be taking a nap, calling a friend, or even visiting your own doctor. Look, we both know that more challenges await us, but let's deal with today, what's closest, and do the next right thing.
This has been your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger, brought to you by Standing with Hope, a ministry for the wounded and those who care for them. There's more information at standingwithhope.com.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. Glad to have you with us. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. Oh, I wanted to add something to my last section about things you want to do to protect yourself. Because look, this whole thing is going to get increasingly worse. People are easy prey to this stuff with spam callers, phishing, and everything else. Check your social media accounts. Look under Instagram and see who has direct messaged you or who is following you. Look at the people who are following you. It may be nice to have a lot of followers, but if they're filled with a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, I just brought that one. I dusted that term off, ne'er-do-wells. Just check and see. And if you don't know them and if they don't look legit or if they don't look like somebody you'd like to have following you, get rid of them. Okay, block them, delete them. A lot of spam out there. A lot of fake robo accounts with X, with Instagram, with all of them. So clean it up. Make sure your social media pages and your loved ones' social media pages are cleaned up. And you might want to limit how much you use this. If you're not really using it, I mean, every day with active engagement or for business or things like that, I'd question not whether or not you need to leave the account open. It's an easy access point for people to get to you. Be careful what you post out there with pictures and so forth. One of the things I respect so much about my daughter-in-law and son is that they are absolutely committed to not putting the faces of their children out on social media. And I'm very grateful for that. They are vigilant about this. They are there's no compromising. Those children's faces will never be on social media. And when they get old enough, they want to do it themselves. Well, that's their business. But my daughter-in-law was pretty firm about that. And I'm very grateful. We put more stuff out there than we realize. And if you're not willing to put this on a public bulletin board or staple it to a telephone pole in a seedy side of town, then think hard before you put it out there. If you notice on my Facebook page, most of it, I put out there pictures of horses and the scenery out here in Montana. So I'm very guarded in what I do, and I would encourage you to do the same. Okay, so that's my safety tips for today. Let's switch gears a little bit, and let's address things you never want to say to a caregiver. Okay, we've all been there. And I think it's important that we unpack this and then let's talk about why. So the first one is, let me know if there's something I can do to help. Okay, don't say that to a caregiver. Let me know if there's something I can do to help. So what happens when you say that to a caregiver is that in the caregiver's mind, they're number one thinking, okay, I have a lot of things you could do to help, but I don't know if you would really, 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 really want to do it. So I'm embarrassed or reticent to ask you. And then the second thing that goes on in a caregiver's mind is, if I ask you to do this, can you do this? Are you up to this? Number three, are you going to be weird about it if you do it? And then it's going to get our relationship kind of weird. Are you going to mess it up? And then I have to come back and clean it up. Or are you going to do it for a while and then you're going to be like, oh my gosh, what have I got myself into? And it's going to be real awkward. Then you just leave. And then it's so awkward that the relationship is fractured. You see the position that a caregiver's put in when you ask that question. Let me know if there's something I can do to help. And there's, I don't know many caregivers who are going to respond in the affirmative to that, who are going to say, oh, I got here something you could do. Most of us are just not going to do that because we don't feel comfortable with it. It's not the right question. And it's not that we don't want your help, the person offering, and it's not that the person offering doesn't want to help, that it's not sincere, that they'd like to do something. But what we have to do is be intentional when we ask a caregiver about getting involved in their life and rephrase the question. So instead of saying, let me know if there's something I can do to help, how is it different when you say, hey, I'm at the grocery store. Would it be helpful if I brought you some milk? All of a sudden, it's very intentional. It's very specific. And it's something that is incredibly doable. Would it be helpful if I took your car and got the tires rotated and balanced? Or the oil changed? And I'll leave you with mine and just give it to me for an hour or so and I'll get this taken care of. Would that be helpful? If the caregiver you know is tired, looks worn out, overwhelmed and stressed, you could pretty much guarantee that their car and their house are going to be the same way. And so let's be intentional about how we help a caregiver. If you want to help a caregiver, this is what it looks like. Would it be helpful for me to do this? It'd be very specific. It doesn't have to be elaborate. In fact, sometimes the more mundane, the better, because the mundane stuff wears caregivers down. Would it be helpful if I called somebody to come over here and clean your gutters? You know, it's fall. There are a lot of leaves out. So would that be helpful? I have a service that I know they'd be glad to come out and do it. I mean, because when's the last time a caregiver got on a roof and everybody said, oh, hey, that's a good thing. I've got to get my gutters cleaned out here. We don't have many leaves where we are that fall, but we have one tree back there and it gets right in the gutters, but the gutter's not real high. And with a smaller ladder, I can just reach my hand up. In fact, I don't even have to use a ladder on one part because of the way it's shaped there. It's just that one spot. But when we lived in Nashville, we had a lot of trees and a lot of problems with leaves in our gutters. And it was pretty much a regular occurrence that I had to get up on the roof. And then I stopped doing that. Because how many of you all think, just by show of hands, that it's a good idea for me to get up on a roof? Any of y'all think that's a good idea? And so how about you? Is it a good idea for you to get on a roof? So for those who are wanting to help a caregiver, here's what it looks like. Find something extremely specific and say, would it be helpful if I got this done for you? And you don't have to physically do it yourself. There are people out there that can do all kinds of things, services you can contract with or whatever. It depends on how much money you want to spend or what's involved. Sometimes it'll cost some money. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the caregiver has money that can do it. They'll just give you their credit card and make it happen. Would you do that? Oh, that would save me so much if you would take this car down there and get the oil changed. Here's my card. I mean, think about that. How difficult is that? And all of a sudden now you've done something. And you don't have to change your oil every day. You know, you don't have to rotate and balance your tires every day. You don't have to get milk every day, usually. So, I mean, little things. And please do not undervalue the little things. Because for caregivers, the little things are where a lot of the struggles are. It's like death by a thousand paper cuts kind of thing. And so anytime we can offload some of the mundane, it gives us a moment just to catch our breath. And so those are ways that you can help and avoid saying, let me know if there's something I can do to help. I'll tell you, if you want to know how to help a caregiver, listen to this program. I'll tell you how to do that. Don't ask that of a caregiver. Okay? They're already stressed enough. I mean, I'm a caregiver, so I'm already stressed enough, but I've been dealing with this a long time, and this is what I do. But I'll be glad to provide insights and ideas, and you can certainly go out to my website at hopeforthecaregiver.com, write me, and say, hey, look, I got a friend of mine, here's what's going on, what are some ways that you think would be helpful that I could do this without having them struggle with making decisions or letting it get uncomfortable? Very easy, practical things that we can do for one another to help bear these burdens without getting into drama and all that kind of stuff. I think I told you all this story of a friend of mine whose Sunday school class wanted to adopt this family in their community. And he called me up and said, we're looking at setting up to bring meals to them. And then we're going to also start cleaning their home. And it's a mother of two children, and the husband has some significant brain issue going on, and it's been going on about 5 years. And I put the brakes on him pretty fast. I said, whoa. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, this has been going on for 5 years. How long are you prepared to do this with meals? He said, well, I hadn't thought about it. I said, well, take a moment. And I said, this has been going on for 5 years. How long are you prepared to clean their home? And thought about that. I said, well, take a moment. I said, do you understand the issue? This is not an episodic event. This is not a broken leg or a one-time surgery or one-off. This is a chronic impairment. And I'll never forget being at a church. I was speaking, and I was throwing this conversation topic out. And I looked at the congregation. I said, how many of you all think I need help? And they all raised their hands. I said, how many of you all know what to do to help somebody like me? And one lady raised her hand. She said, well, I can come clean your house. And by that time, Gracie and I have been doing this for about 25 years. And I looked at her and I said, that is incredibly generous and very gracious. But this has been going on for a quarter century for us. Are you prepared for that level of commitment? She said, no, I didn't think about that. Again, take a moment. You have to approach these things differently. And my friend said, well, what should we do at our Sunday school class? What should we do? And I said, well, there are a lot of things you can do. Number one is, if you want her home, do you want to help her with housekeeping stuff? You don't want to certainly get up in her business and get in her house and get in her personal space and everything else. That gets uncomfortable. But there are services that you can hire that could come in and do that once a week, you know, twice a week if necessary. And he said, well, you know, she works full time and she has two kids. And I looked at him and I said, you've known me since college. I work full time. I have two kids. This is at the time my kids were in school. And he started laughing. He said, well, I guess I didn't think about that. And I said, well, yeah, take a moment, you know? And so he thought about that. He said, you know, we could pool our resources and then we can develop a budget and we can help bring someone in to do that. And he said, what about meals? I said, well, she could cook. And he started to say, she works full time and has two kids. I said, and he took a moment to think about it. And I said, but you can stock their pantry. Now, that's something you can do. Or you could just have her call in the grocery list and the store will put it all together for her and you pick it up and bring it to the home and help them with that. And that way she can cook the meals herself. Because the moment you guys start bringing meals, the first meal will be real elaborate. Second one will be kind of elaborate. Third one, fourth one. And by the 3 weeks into this, you're just dropping off dominoes and the kids are wondering, is somebody coming that night? So one of the things you never want to say to a caregiver is, let me know if there's something I can do to help. There's always something you can do to help. The question is, are we creative enough to identify? Do we know them enough? Do we spend time with them enough to be able to identify what those areas are and then speak specifically to it? Okay, we'll be back with more of that. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. We'll be right back.
The Middle East, that's one part of the world we need to pay attention to, especially the country of Israel. Each week, I'll help you make sense of what's happening in that region through a biblical lens. I'll bring you important information about security threats, archaeological discoveries, biblical prophecy, ministries happening on the ground, and much more. I'm John Riley. Join me for the Middle East Report Special Edition every Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio as I connect you to the people, places, and geography of what we read in God's Word.
What's going to happen this week in the Holy Land? War obviously will continue, but will the war grow in intensity? I'm Charles Morris with Haven Today. Won't you join me on our programs this week for a series called Israel? Help and Hope.
Haven Today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Listen online at afr.net.
Hey friends, it's Jessica Peck, Dr. Nurse Mama, as your one-minute parenting coach. Do you feel pressure in today's world to be a perfect parent? We feel like if we don't have our kids in the honors program or in select sports or wearing the latest fashions, we are somehow failing them. The truth is, our kids don't want perfect parents, even if that were possible. They want present parents. Are you physically in your child's presence every day? And when you are you emotionally present? Are you living in the moment? Are you making eye contact for 20 seconds or more? Are you listening with your whole face and attention? When you feel badly about your child not having something, remember that truly the thing they want most is you. I'll see you on the Dr. Nurse Mama radio show on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. That's the whole point of this program, by the way. When I started doing this many, many, many years ago, I set out with that statement in mind. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. People ask me over the time, well, what's the purpose of your program? And what are you trying to accomplish? I said, healthy caregivers make better caregivers. And they said, well, how do you help a caregiver get healthy? And I said, aha, that's the right question. Now you're asking the right question, because so many people don't know what to say to a caregiver. They don't know the questions to ask. With my new book and this program and all the things that I am working hard to do for family caregivers, that excuse is no more. If you don't know what to say to a caregiver, don't worry about it. I do. That's why I do this program, because I want to speak to these core needs. And so today I'm taking a few moments to talk about things you should never say to a caregiver. You should never say these things to a caregiver. And I'll tell you why when I unpack each one of these. Last segment we had, let me know if there's something I can do. Don't say that to a caregiver. Okay, we talked about that in the last block. There's other ways to offer assistance that is targeted, that is specific, that is intentional, that hits the mark. And that's what we talked about. And I'll be glad to readdress this at any time. The second thing you don't want to say to a family caregiver. You want to take a stab at it? You want to guess what that is? Well, I'll go ahead and tell you then. Don't say, I know how you feel. Because you don't. It is impossible for us to know how someone else feels. That is a inappropriate choice of words. I understand the sentiment that's trying to be conveyed, but sentiment doesn't help us as caregivers. Would you not all agree, those of you who are caregivers in this audience, would you agree with that statement that sentiment doesn't help? There needs to be something different. Now, empathy does help. Sympathy is always very kind, that's gracious, but it doesn't help. If you go to a family caregiver and say, I know how you feel, you're making it about you. Okay? That's not what needs to happen. You all heard me tell this story before. I don't mean to slam the guy, but it was a great illustration of a guy trying to connect, and I appreciated his heart, but it was, well, I'll tell you the story. I'll tell you what happened, and then you tell me. But he came up to me after church one Sunday. This is many years ago when we lived in Nashville. And he said, I heard about your story and I know exactly what you're going through. And I cocked an eyebrow up and I said, really? I had no idea that anybody in this town, much less this church, had that level of experience. Do tell. He said, yes, I know exactly what you're going through. I know how you feel. My wife broke her ankle last month. Well, now, what do you want me to do with that information? It was hard for, I will have you all know, and you'll be very proud of me. I was gracious. I was very kind. And I said what every Southern gentleman should say in a moment like this, which was, bless your heart. Now, let me be clear. I am not denying this man's pain. The most pain you've ever felt is the most pain you've ever felt. Okay? I'm not denying this. I am not denying how difficult his life and his wife's life and how, you know, disrupting that event was. But it shows a deplorable lack of understanding to go to a man whose wife doesn't have any ankles and talk about his wife just breaking her ankle and then saying, I know how you feel. I understand exactly what you're going through. That's an unfortunate lack of awareness. Okay? I'm not in any way impugning him. God bless him. And you know, I trust that she's okay. And now this has been, of course, many years. But he was trying to make a connection. I appreciated that. I really do. But are we trying to make a connection? Are we throwing things against the wall to see if that's going to work, if that's going to make a connection, or can we be more specific? And what is it that a caregiver wants to hear? I want to hear, you know, as I'm going to church and I'm thinking about the things that I'm caring about with Gracie that day, and it was a particularly difficult time in Gracie's life, as if any day's not a difficult time in her life, but that was particularly difficult. And I'm not, you know, I'm learning to have a measure of restraint. You know, there was a time when I was pretty angry and I would have probably popped off and said something unfortunate to him that I would have had to make amends for. Never speak in anger. Ambrose Bierce said, it'll be the best speech you'll ever regret. And I don't want to do that. And I don't want to crush his spirit. But at the same time, I want to protect mine. And also I want to educate people. We're better than this. We can do better than this. And caregivers don't need to know that you know exactly what they're going through. That doesn't really help them. But what they do want to know is that they're seen. They're seen. They're seen. Instead of launching into, I know exactly what you're going through, why don't you take a moment to quietly look at the caregiver? Maybe take their hand in yours and look at them in the eye and say, look, I see you. I see you. And then very quietly say, I see the magnitude of what you carry. And I hurt with you. And I hurt with you. Try that. This is taking it out of the arena of this being all about you or whatever. But it's focusing on the person who is crying out. But they don't have the vocabulary to cry out. They don't have the wherewithal sometimes to cry out. They don't know what to say. You know, there's an old quote, I think Will Rogers said it, about veterinarians. He said, veterinarians make the best doctors because they just have to know. The cat and the dog can't tell them. The animal cannot tell them what's the matter. And so Will Rogers said, they have to be the best doctors because they have to know. But as Christians, as people who bear the name of Christ, we can walk into painful circumstances of people's lives. And with the discerning abilities that the Holy Spirit provides, be able to look at them and see them the way we want to be seen. And we speak into that with clarity, with purpose, with understanding, with empathy, with knowledge. We may know a measure of what they're going through. There's very few caregivers that I'm going to meet that I'm not going to understand a measure of what they're going through. But I'm never going to understand what they feel. I'm never going to know exactly what they feel. What I can do is let them know that I can see them. That's why I started doing this program, because I saw this audience. And I see you, even though I do this in a room where I'm just looking at a wall. But when I'm talking to you, I see your faces. I have you, different people in this audience write me letters. They call me. They reach out to me. I have a Facebook group where people post things and I get to see them and what they're going through. And I have all of your faces that are in front of me when I do this. I've got a guy in Texas, Carl. He listens every Sunday night. And he writes me beautiful letters. I've got another guy in Jackson, Mississippi, who sends me beautiful notes of encouragement. And I can just go through the list of all these people in this audience. And I want you to know that yours are the faces and the names that I see when I do this. I know what it's like to not be seen. Even though I was out on stages with Gracie. But people didn't see me. They didn't really understand the magnitude of what I carried. I had a pastor friend of mine who listens to this program. He's in Mississippi. Wonderful friend. Retired pastor. And he came up to me a long time ago. And he said, Peter, you do yourself a disservice. I said, what do you mean? He said, you make this look easier than it is. And people have no idea what you carry. That stuck with me because I realized how many of my fellow caregivers do exactly that. We're high-functioning multitaskers. And it's very difficult for people to see us. It's very difficult for us to feel seen. And so the first thing I want you to know is that you are seen, not by me. I'm just a flawed human being. But you are seen by the Most High. To my fellow caregivers, I will tell you that you are seen by the Most High. He recognizes this. He understands this. And he does understand exactly what you're going through. He's the only one who can. And he sees this. My hope for us as Christians is that we will take our cue from our Savior and respond accordingly the way he did for us. You remember what he told, I think it was Nathaniel? He said, I saw you under the fig tree. I saw you. He's the God who sees. El Roy, R-O-I. That was a name that was given to him by guess who? You remember who that was? I'll give you a hint. It was in Genesis chapter 16. And there was a lady named Hagar. And she was the servant to Sarah. Sarai at the time. And Sarai wasn't having the promised child, so she came up with an idea, and she went to Abraham and said, hey, take my servant Hagar, and then Hagar got pregnant, and then she started giving evidently a little bit of a look to Sarai, and Sarai got a little upset, and she started being abusive and treating Hagar poorly. It was all Sarah's idea, and Hagar fled, and she went out in the wilderness. And the angel of the Lord found her, verse 7, by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And the angel said to her, Hagar, servant of Sarah, what are you doing out here? And she said, I'm running away because she's been treated poorly. And the angel said, you go back. And he told her everything that's going to happen to her son. And so she called the name of the Lord. You are a God of seeing. In Hebrew, it's El Roy. And that, I think that's the only place in Scripture where you have that. But this is a servant woman who was caught up in a lot of mess between Abram and Sarai and doing the best she could to kind of deal with it. And God saw her. He sees you too. You may be in a mess, but he's the God who sees. And that's the model for us when we look at each other. Are we modeling that? Do we see one another? Not make it about us, but to say, I see you. Don't tell a caregiver that you know how they feel. Instead, look at them in the eyes and say, I see you. I see what you're carrying, and I hurt with you, and I'm here. This is Peter Rosenberger. We'll be right back. I'll never forget walking into the hospital room after Gracie had her second amputation. Both legs are gone now. And she looked at me. She said, "I know what I'm going to do." And I was kind of startled. I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to help provide prosthetic limbs to my fellow amputees and tell them about Jesus." And I said, "Well, baby, can we get out of the hospital first?" But she never let it go. And for almost 20 years, we've been working out of Ghana, West Africa. We treat patients all over there from other countries that come there. We send supplies. We send teams. We sponsor patients. We work with a prison where inmates volunteer to disassemble used prosthetic limbs so we can recycle the parts. All of this because Gracie trusted God with her heartache. We've got a huge shipment of supplies that is being loaded up right now to go out soon. Would you help us do it? StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. There's prosthetic feet, knees, pylons, sleeves, adapters, all kinds of connectors. All of these things we are sending over there so that people can walk. We're going to point them to Christ. Help us out. StandingWithHope.com/giving.
Thank you for listening to American Family Radio. We're the broadcast division of the American Family Association, and if you just found us, welcome. We hope you'll stay, especially if you're tired of watching the enemy increase his attacks on the family and on Christians in general. AFR is a one-stop location for the information and Bible teaching you need to help you take action and make a godly impact in our culture. Our up-to-the-minute newscasts bring you accurate, fair reporting from a biblical perspective. You'll also find programs that will give you in-depth insight into the culture war and political activity that can affect you and your family. And along the way, strengthen your Christian worldview with Bible instruction from some of the most knowledgeable teachers anywhere. If you hear something you like and you want to listen to it again, or if you want to share it with someone else, our programs are available on demand in our podcast section online. Keep listening to AFR on the radio or online at afr.net.
He knows just what you're going through. So when you can't see what tomorrow holds and yesterday is through, remember he knows the plans he has for you.
Is it any wonder why I love listening to that woman sing? Many of you all know the story of how we met at school in Nashville. She was coming back after recuperating from this wreck, already had about 20-something surgeries, and I met her at the Student Center at Belmont. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful young woman. But then I heard her sing, and it was all over at that point. And that song, Martha Minuzzi wrote that song, and Gracie did a great version of that because he knows just what you're going through. He's the only one that does, as we said on the last block. So we're talking about the thing. Oh, by the way, welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to have you with us at hopeforthecaregiver.com. We're talking about things not to say to a caregiver. The first one was, don't say, "Let me know if there's something I can do." Don't say, "I know just what you're going through." And the third one is, don't say, "Well, God obviously has a plan or she wouldn't be here. Or he wouldn't be here." Don't say that. People have told us that for a lifetime. Gracie's been hurt now for 40 years. Do you know how many times we've heard that? "God obviously has a plan." Well, if it's obvious, you don't need to say it then, okay? I don't need people to tell me the obvious. I know he has a plan. That's the whole point of that song. That's the whole point of Scripture. Now, we may not know all that's involved with this. And I'm not going to try to manufacture a reason why Gracie has to suffer. Okay? I'm not going to try to do that. People say, "Well, look at the ministry you all have. Look at the impact you're having." Hey, look, you know, I'm not that noble. Okay? And let's be frank. Billy Graham had a pretty good run and he had both legs. All right? So that's not why we do what we do. I don't do this radio program, and Gracie certainly didn't launch the prosthetic limb outreach in order to give purpose and meaning to the challenges that we face. Me as her caregiver, and she as an amputee with a broken body. That's not why we do this. We're not trying to manufacture some kind of purpose to this. We're modeling to the best of our ability 2 Corinthians 1:4, which states, "He comforts us in all our affliction so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." And the last thing that Gracie and I need is anybody to come up to us and say, "Well, he obviously has a purpose or she wouldn't be here." I have had more people tell me that and it's a bit tiresome. Okay? Would you say that to a non-believer? If not, why not? I mean, think about what we're saying there. Well, God has a purpose for your suffering. You know, yay, God. But where does that leave the person you're talking to? Where does that leave me? Where does that leave Gracie? And think of anybody else. Where does that leave you? Somebody comes up, well, hey, God has a purpose for this. Yay, I feel better now. Are we addressing the core need? I don't think we are. I think we can do better than this. And sometimes it's a matter of not doing anything. Sometimes it's just sitting with someone. Now go back and look at the book of Job. And the first couple chapters are hard to read because basically Satan bets God, hey, look, of course he's going to like you because you give him everything. Give me a whack at him. God says, okay, go ahead. So there's this kind of this cosmic wager, as Philip Yancey says, which I admit is very challenging for me personally to read. And God allows Satan to take a whack at Job, and it's brutal. But Job doesn't flinch from serving God. He struggles, but he doesn't flinch. Satan goes back and says, well, yeah, but you know, let me have this that I'll take him personally. He asks for more permission. God gives it to him. Just spare his life. And this goes on, and Job is just taken into the depths of suffering, and his friends are just aghast, and they come and sit with him. And if you look at Job chapter 2, verse 13, his friends sat there silent with him for 7 days because they saw his suffering was great. The next 30-plus chapters are the largest display of bad theology in the entire Bible because Job's friends start speculating on why this happened. None of them got it right. The only one that even came close was this young man who they kind of dismissed, and he was close, but he still didn't get it. And after God shows up to address Job, and Job realizes a higher understanding of God, God leaves instructions for Job's friends to make sacrifice and get Job to pray for them, lest he bring this on them. Now, those are pretty hard words. I heard a pastor once in a sermon say, people tell you that they believe the Bible until they read it. And then they find out there's some tough stuff to read in there. And the book of Job is not easy to read. But it gives you an insight on what God thinks of when people speculate on what God is doing. And I think when it comes to that with caregivers, it's not advisable to be glib or to spend a lot of time trying to speculate on what God is doing. We have no idea. His ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. He said this very clearly. And we don't know. I've lived with Gracie now for a lifetime, and I have no idea why God allows her to suffer. I have struggled with this, watching someone suffer. I have no idea why God has allowed this for me to go through. I see things that he has done through this to give me a greater understanding of him. And as I address you here on this program, this is the largest radio program for caregivers in the world. And I see that is a great opportunity, but not, this is not the reason Gracie suffers. This is not the reason I've gone through all this. There's a much higher reason that we won't know till we get to heaven. And the only thing I do on this program is offer the same comfort that I myself have received from the God of all comfort. I feel that I have a responsibility, a stewardship opportunity to do that. This is what I have received. And now I'm extending it to you so that you may know this and others may know this. That's it. But for me to somehow speculate on why God's doing this, I can't. Who can know this? But what I can tell you, it's the same thing I told our oldest son when he was 9 years old. And I'll never forget this. I was sitting back in his bedroom at our home in Nashville, and he was really upset. And he looked at me, and it was big brown eyes of his, and he said, why should I trust God to care about my hurts when I see what he allows Mom to go through? Now, that's a tough question, would you not say, from anybody? But I would challenge any theologian I know to look at a 9-year-old with his eyes filled with tears asking that question who has watched his mother suffer. And because God intervened in my life, this did not come from me. I can promise you this because I know me and I've seen my work. But at that time, I looked at our son and I said, "Son, I do not know why your mother has to suffer." I did not try to give him a reason that God is using her to help fellow amputees in Africa, and that I'm going to have a big radio program for caregivers and write books for caregivers and speak around. I didn't give him any of that because none of that mattered. He's 9 years old. His eyes are filled with tears. He has watched his mother lose both legs, and he is struggling to understand why he should trust in a good and loving God. And I said to him, "Son, I don't know why your mother has to suffer, and I don't know why we have to watch her do it. But here's what I do know, is that God sent his son to bear the penalty of sin. This world is filled with sin. All of these things, to redeem this, even with your mother. But his son bore all of that on the cross. And if he loves us that much, I'm willing to trust him with your mother. I'm willing to trust him with all this pain." I stand by that statement that I made so many years ago. That statement has sometimes been the only anchor that I could hold on to when everything was buffeting me and I was being pulled in all kinds of different directions, stretched thinner than I could ever imagine. And the last thing that I needed anybody to come up to me was to say, "Well, God obviously has a purpose." I need for them to understand that we serve the purpose-driven God and we can trust him because of what happened at the cross. That is what sustains a caregiver. That is what speaks to the heart of a caregiver. We will never know all of God's purposes. We will never be like him. He is other. He is different. We draw our being from him. We are separate. We don't have to know. We are invited to point to him. We are invited to point to the one who does know what he's doing. And he gives us ample evidence that we can trust him. His revealed word, our scriptures that we have today, his revealed word is filled with individuals who did not understand, and yet they trusted. Go back and look at Genesis 15. We talked about Genesis 16 with Hagar, but look at Genesis 15. "And Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him as righteousness." Not believed in God. He believed God. He took him at his word. We are told over and over and over again in scriptures that he is the God who sees, that his loving kindness never fails, that he loves us, that he knows us by name, that our names are engraved in the palm of his hand. He knows the hairs on our head. Consider the birds of the air, the lilies of the field. Are we not more valuable to our Heavenly Father than those? That is what you say to a caregiver who is in distress, a caregiver who is struggling. You don't say God obviously has a purpose. You point them to the purpose-driven God. And that, my friends, is hope for the caregiver. Thank you for spending the time with me today. This is Peter Rosenberger, hopeforthecaregiver.com. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio. Faith.